This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
Is solving a university-level math problem your idea of having fun? Well, then I've got a book for you. A professor from Oxford University in the UK has compiled over 100 of these problems for people who love a good math puzzle.
I'm a fully signed-up nerd, if you like to think of us that way.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, a look at Professor Povey's perplexing problems. We'll also listen in on a public session on Common Core in northern New York State and spend an academic minute building a better bridge. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. A lot of people love a good puzzle. One of the most popular segments on public radio every week is the Sunday Morning Puzzle with Will Shortz. But those are mostly word puzzles. How about something for the math nerds? That's where Thomas Povey comes in. In his new book, Professor Povey's Perplexing Problems, he takes problems that might appear on a university entrance exam and turns them into puzzles with varying degrees of difficulty, from, oh, okay, I can do that, to, oh my God! Thomas Povey is a professor of engineering science at the University of Oxford, where he researches jet engine and rocket technology. So, of course, I started out by asking him if I can finally say I actually talked to a real rocket scientist.
I guess you can. I mean, I work in a lab that specializes in aerodynamics and heat transfer, and we do a lot of work on jet engines, but a certain amount of work on rocket engines. I've certainly worked on rocket engines myself and know a lot of rocket engineers. So in that sense, it is absolutely true, although I wouldn't say it was my core specialism.
Well, and I guess one of your side hobbies is you're officially a math nerd?
I'm sort of a math nerd. I mean, I'm mainly interested in puzzles. So I'm interested in maths and physics puzzles with an emphasis, I suppose, on physics puzzles. But of course, they contain a lot of mathematics along the way. So I'm a fully signed up nerd, if you like to think of us that way.
I was interested. The title of your book calls them problems, not puzzles. Any reason for that?
Yeah, well, actually, so that was a difficult decision. So we've actually tried to get both problems and puzzles into the title. So we put problems in the main title and puzzles in the subtitle to sort of convey the fact that actually these are pretty tough, but they're treated in the way of puzzles, in that the emphasis in the book is on really enjoying them and playing with them and having fun. And I've tried to depart as much as possible from a conventional textbook in the way it's formatted. So it's sort of formatted in a fun, friendly way, in the way I would have liked if I was buying a book to dip into and enjoy physics rather than study it for an exam.
And what level would you say these puzzles are?
Okay, so it's aimed at pre-university students. So in the UK, that would mean students between 16 and 18 years old. So those preparing for university courses in maths, physics, engineering, those sorts of STEM subjects at university. It's probably accessible to people a little bit younger than 16, but they would struggle with the more mathematical elements in it. It's certainly not a pure popular science book, although there is a lot of fun and interesting anecdotal science and research science thrown in amongst some really quite difficult physics puzzles.
And are math and science just intertwined? You can never separate one without the other?
I mean, in most science subjects, that's absolutely true. I mean, it's to do with the way you approach the study of whatever discipline you're working in, isn't it? And I mean, certainly for physics, maths and physics are completely intertwined because maths is really the language of physics. So there are people who have tried to popularize physics by essentially removing all the mathematics. And we have a tendency in the UK now, a very disturbing tendency, actually, to sort of extract all the mathematics from physics education in schools to make it more friendly and accessible. And the same in the way it's presented in sort of popular science, where you discuss the abstract ideas but without any mathematics at all. But I don't think that's really a true representation of what it's like to study physics or other science subjects at university. And it's certainly not a representation of what it would be like to be a practicing scientist, where maths is entirely embedded in the discipline. So I think it's quite a dangerous trend, really, which is a sort of disservice to the younger generation.
What's special about these problems? How did you pluck them out of the sky?
Okay, so these puzzles are the most fun problems or puzzles I've come across in physics in the whole time I've been studying physics. So it's literally the most exciting, fun, enjoyable things I've come across. And in a sense, it's completely arbitrary in the sense that it's the things that appeal to me. But, you know, they've been selected from thousands of puzzles I'm familiar with to be the ones that I think are most exciting for young people to grapple with. And they're also aimed at a particular level. So they're aimed at students who have basic pre-university mathematics, you know, of a standard equivalent to sort of leaving high school, if you like.
You talked about the university entrance exams making students think out of the box, and it seems these puzzles were proposed for just that.
Yeah, that's the idea. So the way the education system has gone in the UK is that problems at the high school leaving level have become more and more formulaic. So they're sort of set problems, if you like, that students can revise and learn for the exam. And in fact, the emphasis in the way it's taught now is increasingly towards preparing for a particular exam. And what people want to test at the stage at which students are applying for universities, an ability to think beyond that, think more creatively, and apply knowledge that they've gained in their high school courses to problems they have never seen before. So these are problems that are designed to test that sort of ability, to think outside the box, to use knowledge already gained in creative and new directions, not to solve problems of a type already encountered.
Boy, just to get off topic for a second, there's nothing more universal than a teacher not liking having to teach to the test.
That is probably true, but actually we have so many targets in the UK that teachers are increasingly forced down that route because schools are sort of monitored in terms of how many A grades and A star grades their pupils get. And it's really a bad thing for schools now not to compete in that kind of way. So unfortunately, teachers are forced more and more towards teaching for exams. So in fact, I've had a huge amount of feedback from heads of physics and maths in schools on this book, saying it's actually just what they need for their most able pupils to have fun classes on these topics when they have time to do that in actually quite a busy set of lessons teaching towards getting good marks in exams.
You rate these puzzles by stars. One star are the easy ones, the four-star ones are the really tough ones. That's pretty subjective. Are the one stars for you kind of four stars for other people and vice versa?
It's totally subjective. So actually, I had quite a few friends try most of these problems, and we had long debates about whether they were one star, two star, and so forth. And of course, it is, exactly as you say, entirely subjective. In fact, I was persuaded by the publisher to put a star system in, because the problem is, some of these puzzles are actually really very, very difficult, and there was a sort of alarming thought that a student might dip into it, try all of the four-star puzzles first, or the ones that I perceive as being most difficult first, by accident, and feel very discouraged. So I'm sure there's some sort of latitude for interpretation, but generally speaking, the one-star ones are easier and the four-star ones are harder. But it depends what you're good at, right? I mean, I'm good at certain things and less good at other things, as would be any student looking at the book.
Are you sure you got them all right?
Yeah. What, the answers to the puzzles?
Yes.
I'm absolutely sure I have not got them all right. And in fact, I go to great pains in the introduction to say that I would welcome any correspondence or the problems. So the book's been out for, about 5 months, and it's had three or four reprints now. So it's, I think it's sold a few thousand copies. It's doing better than expected, considering it's a physics book. And I've had five corrections, one of which I would say was a major correction. So there aren't too many out-and-out mistakes in there yet, but I'm still waiting for readers to contact me.
This might be too philosophical, but are there some problems that just have no right answer?
That's a good question. I mean, these are problems in classical physics, so I don't think it would be true to say that categorically that there were problems without right answers. There are certainly problems without right ways of approaching them, in that there are many more elegant solutions than the ones I've proposed in the book. In actual fact, I've tried in the book to stick to methods or concepts or techniques that would be most universally useful to students approaching problems at this level, rather than the ones that are particularly clever. So I've tried not to show off, if you like, in the answers in the book. I have a website for the book as well, where I've encouraged readers to post more elegant solutions than my own.
What are some of the topics that you use for the problems that you really kind of identified with and had more fun with? I know you seem to enjoy roller coasters.
Roller coaster is a good one because you can cover lots of interesting things with roller coasters. So you can look at centripetal motion, and you can look at centers of mass and energy balances on systems and so forth with roller coasters. So those come up quite a lot. I mean, what I've done is I've basically split the book up into the big topics in classical physics. So there are sections on heat, on optics. There are some sections on mathematics and geometry and so forth, gravity, electricity, kinematics. So it's split up in that kind of obvious way. The problems are probably mainly unfamiliar to readers, simply because most of them were invented by me or by friends of mine, or they're really unusual takes on well-known problems.
As we become more dependent on technology, is math becoming more important in society?
I think that's absolutely true. I mean, I've been reading recently a number of government reports in the UK talking about the absolutely critical shortage of students entering STEM subjects. This is science, technology, maths, and engineering. And what all of the reports say, and this is true in the US as well, by the way, they say that unless there is really a step change in the number of students entering science-based careers and studying science at university, it will dramatically hold back our economies.
You know, you've been a professor teaching some of these. Are there people that just have mathematical minds and just get this quicker?
I think that's absolutely true. I mean, it's like anything that I think anybody can be good at. I mean, you can teach people, and by teaching people, good teachers can extend people, I think, beyond their natural capability. But there are also people who just are naturally talented. So there are people who are designed to be runners. There are people who are designed to do complex things with their hands. And there are people who just find dealing with mathematics and abstract concepts in physics very easy. So to them, it comes more naturally. But I think a good teacher can take anybody from their natural level, if you like, and take them just a little step higher by stretching them.
Well, the book has been out for a while, and you said you have a website up for feedback. Are people submitting puzzles to you to try to stump you?
Yeah, I've had a few people contact me. So the main people I've had contact me are actually heads of physics and maths at schools. And essentially the correspondence is about how much they like the book and how they would like additional problems that you can use in their classes. So problems that are sort of free to distribute in classes. So what I've done is I've put together a bunch of, I suppose, puzzle competitions is the best way of describing them, which are freely distributed to teachers to use in their classes for fun lessons. I've also had a bunch of students contact me, which is very nice, often proposing interesting problems. Some of the problems don't make sense. Some are actually absolutely brilliant. And the ones that are most brilliant, I have asked permission of the people who invented them to use them in a second book if I ever have time to write one.
Well, that was my next question. When's volume 2 coming out?
I have no idea. I'm kind of busy with a lot of other stuff at the moment, and this was a bit of a diversion for me, but I would love to write another book. I'm actually vaguely thinking about doing one for younger people because the reception to this one has been nicer than I had expected, really, in terms of the positive feedback I've received. And it may be nice to target one at an age group maybe a couple of years lower, so the people maybe 2 years before the end of their high school careers, with a similar sort of content. I mean, I suppose the philosophy with the book, an unusual part of the philosophy of the book, is not to patronize students. So in a way, I deal with all the material, which has a whole mix of scientific history, current research, personal anecdote in terms of my career as a scientist and so forth. I present all that material as I would to an adult. So it's not sort of dumbing it down and talking about the science behind Doctor Who or the Starship Enterprise. I think actually even really quite young people with a genuine interest in maths and physics can appreciate most of the concepts and appreciate the interest in those concepts in the same way as adults can.
Well, if you get one aimed at a much lower level, I'll at least have a chance at a few of these.
I'm sure you don't stand a chance at most of the ones in this book.
I have one more question, and this, again, is going off topic. So tell me about developing the perfect saucepan.
Oh, dear. You found out about the saucepan. Yes. So most of my work is on jet engines and rockets, but I have a bunch of side projects which are really just for fun. The saucepan actually came out of my interest in mountaineering, in that I've done a lot of cooking at high altitude on big mountains in the Alps. And it's very difficult to cook efficiently at high altitude with saucepans because most of the heat escapes. So I invented a very lightweight mountaineering stove about 10 years ago that would cook very efficiently at high altitude. And pretty much the same day as I invented it, some chaps in the US invented an almost identical saucepan, patented it before I did, and then brought it to market extremely successfully. So it sat on the shelf for a bunch of years, and then I thought I'd see if I could reinvent it for the domestic market. So a few years ago, picked it up again, had some master's students do fun projects on it, trying to optimize the saucepan, and then, amazingly, managed to commercialize it, and it's now for sale all over the world, including in the U.S.
Dr. Thomas Povey is a professor of engineering science at the University of Oxford in the United Kingdom. His new book of puzzles is called Professor Povey's Perplexing Problems, Pre-University Physics and Math Puzzles with Solutions. It's published by One World Publications. You can interact with Professor Povey, learn more about the book, find bonus puzzles, and submit some of your own at perplexingproblems.com. Still to come, Common Core still is not that popular in New York State. We'll listen in on a public session on the topic next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to The Best of Our Knowledge's podcast or download the WAMC radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. In the wake of fierce debate over the implementation of the Common Core education standards in New York State, Governor Andrew Cuomo appointed a task force to undertake a comprehensive review and present recommendations. The Best of Our Knowledge's Pat Bradley was in Lake Placid, New York last week for one of three simultaneous public listening sessions. The Common Core task force is holding these sessions in 10 regions across the state. As well as the session in Lake Placid, simultaneous sessions were held last week in central New York and the Mohawk Valley. Two members of the 15-person task force were in Lake Placid to hear from North Country educators, administrators, and parents.
Few praised Common Core. Some called for the system to be scrapped. Most described the system's faults and its negative impacts on students and teachers. Parent and teacher Tim Butler told the panelists Common Core is strangling his ability to teach as he focuses on test preparation.
The tests themselves, of course, are flawed. Last year, I wasn't supposed to, but I read a sixth grade test that was written at a postgraduate level. I know because I did a readability on it. It sickens me that I'm going to be judged on such unfair items. We should throw out the whole Common Core system and reboot and move on.
Good evening. My name is Bob Lattisere. I'm a teacher, a parent, a member of the NICET task force on the Common Core standards. I'm hoping that we will definitely start making sure that teachers are involved in this process. They are the experts. Our governor is not the expert. Business leaders are not the expert. It's the teachers who see the kids every day. They are the ones that should be involved in this process, not just one or two. Let's bring them in herds to settle this problem and fix it.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Guglielmi. I'm a first grade teacher. I've been teaching kindergarten for a few years in the Common Core, and the Common Core is not appropriate for those students. It's not what they need. It doesn't match where they're coming from. People are not one-dimensional, and these students coming in are not one-dimensional either. The best decisions I've made under Common Core are when I try to ignore what I'm supposed to be doing and teach the kids what they actually need. That's a terrible way for our system to be running.
Not everyone who testified criticized the Common Core system. Clarkson University Vice President for External Relations, Kelly Cheesham.
Schools like Clarkson find ourselves on the front line of the effects of an education system that does not prepare enough students in New York State for the challenges of college and work, and especially in the STEM disciplines. This is why we strongly endorse the Common Core standards and Common Core aligned assessments advocated by the governor. We are at a crossroads, and it's critical that we continue implementing the core standards while making reasonable improvements to ensure that everyone, teachers have access to the professional resources they need, test questions that are age and grade level appropriate, and attention to ELL and special needs students. We have an opportunity to improve what has been a rocky start.
This was the third listening session Common Core Task Force member and Sleepy Hollow High School Principal Carol Conklin Spillane has attended. She is hearing recurring themes in the testimony.
We kind of clustered them in categories, issues about curriculum, issues about assessments, and issues with the standards. And so our work will be to bring that back with all the research that we've done, influenced by the public outcry, and we're ready to sit down and do some work and come up with some hard recommendations.
New York State United Teachers Vice President Catalina Fortina is also a member of the task force.
Teachers want to be in the development of the standards that they are working with. What you hear in the forums is the passion that our educators have about really providing the right type of instruction for our students. What you're hearing is parents and educators joining forces to say, let's make the assessments really more responsive to teaching and learning. And it's about bringing the joy back into the classroom.
The Common Core Task Force must report back to the governor by early December. Reporting for the Best of Our Knowledge, I'm Pat Bradley.
Rebuilding the nation's infrastructure may become an issue during the presidential election, so now's the time to start looking at not only building new bridges, but better bridges. And that's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Our crumbling infrastructure is a cause for concern. I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, president of Mount Holyoke College. And today on the Academic Minute, Nabil Grace, engineer at Lawrence Technological University, describes a new material designed to strengthen our bridges.
Now that rebuilding our nation's infrastructure has become a top priority, we should reconsider how we build highway bridges for cold climates. When salt and water interact with the conventional steel rebar used to reinforce bridges, the result is serious corrosion that leads to costly maintenance and potential replacement. Our research has demonstrated that replacing steel with carbon fiber-reinforced polymer will eliminate corrosion. We can double the service lifespan of highway bridges to 100 years and greatly reduce maintenance. Carbon fiber initially costs more than steel, but will save considerable money over time. As a result of our research, carbon fiber has been deployed in 5 highway bridges in Michigan. Our research team is collecting performance data from these bridges in order to develop new design guidelines for highway bridges. These results are being shared with other states. Proposed new designs are tested in our environmental loading chamber that can simulate years of service in a wide range of weather conditions. Another test can measure the long-term loss of tensile strength of the carbon fiber rebar caused by traffic. A fire loading chamber evaluates heat damage. Analyzing data collected in the field and in the lab will help us achieve better designs for highway bridges that will improve driving conditions and save taxpayer dollars.
That was Nabil Grace of Lawrence Technological University. You can find this, other segments, and more information about the professors at academicminute.org.
The Academic Minute is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in partnership with Mount Holyoke College. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to our podcast or any of the other National Productions podcasts. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at wamc.org.